Alan Ernstein, who many of you listeners will by now no doubt have forgotten, is a set designer. We spoke with him a week or two ago. But in addition to designing theatrical stage sets, he also designs board games. Are those related fields?
Well, I suppose that in a sense it is. It's how creative can we get?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one-third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 480, Designing Board Games. Last week, I talked to set designer and assistant professor of theater Alan Ernstein about what a set designer does. This week, I learned that Alan also designs board games. I've never really met a person who designs board games, and it sounds kind of like the coolest gig in the world. So I asked him to tell me about how one designs board games and how he got started.
I played board games when I was a kid growing up. You know, we grew up with the family playing card games and Sorry and all those kinds of things.
Okay.
And as I got older, I got to play along with, other things, other types of games, and that expanded. And then I found out, you know, along with the designing that I do, I have sort of the same kind of approach to messing with the ideas behind board games.
So there's a lot. Does it have to do with logic and figuring out puzzles, or is that not it?
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, part of it is the puzzle, is the process. Some of it is thematic. So, you know, we talk about mechanics and theme in game design a lot.
Okay.
And we
talk about that in our scenery design.
Exactly. It's the same kind of an approach.
Yeah.
And, you know, so as I work on ideas for games, they grow out of either a mechanic, something that I like to do, or intrigues me as a process for a game, and something that is, or something that's thematic.
Okay.
So, for example, one of my games is called Tawantinsuyu, which is also Inca Empire. It's been reprinted as Inca Empire, and Tawantinsuyu is what the Incas called their own empire.
Okay.
So there's historic research, which is the same thing that we do in theater. Mm-hmm. But then on top of that, there is this idea that in watching a film that my wife was screening to teach a class, I went, "Oh, Julie, this is a game." And she goes, "Yeah, everything's a game to you, Alan." And I was like, no. The whole political structure is a process that we can turn into a game.
Interesting.
And is that true for the Incas only, or is that true for political structures throughout history?
I suppose that it's throughout history. Okay. A friend of mine has designed a game about the Nixon election, called 1960, and the one about the Cold War. So anything you can probably come into a game thematically. Sometimes the systems fall into place, and sometimes they don't.
Okay.
And these are board games in the sense that you have markers and you move around a board and there's a journey, there's a quest, there's something, or there's a puzzle to figure out. These are not the kind of, and I don't even know what I'm talking about here, but the card games like I assume to be Dungeons and Dragons.
Magic, something like that. Yeah, so the games that I like to design are what is sort of called Euro-style gaming.
Okay.
Think of chess and think of Monopoly, and then find something in between the two that you might want to sit around with around the table with your friends or family.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing that I like. I like to play games where there is some strategy, there is a plan that you can make to get to the end of the game, to win the game, mm-hmm. whatever that goal is. But then the other player's actions get in your way and you have to adjust.
Right.
And that's the kind of game that I like to play, and therefore that's the kind of game I like to design as well.
So is Monopoly like the major template for most board games? Are there other templates that you use? Or is there no such thing as a template?
Oh, they're not really templates. There are different types of games that become popular and sort of phase through, you know, that there are fads, if you want to think of it that way. Monopoly certainly is an old style of template, which is roll, move, react.
Okay.
Which isn't very proactive. You can't really plan what the dice are going to do for you. In the kind of games that I'm talking about, you actually rarely are you simply moving around a board and reacting to what happens. You're doing a process. So, for example, in this Inca Empire game, you're building a network of roads. You get part of your action is to actually create a road network, because that's something they were known for, and connect to building sites, other sites, conquer territory, whatever. So there is a mechanical process to it as opposed to a randomness. And then the randomness comes partially from what your opponents do,
right,
and partially from events or things. I do like randomness in games. It's always nice to have a surprise.
Right. And this is how woefully ignorant I am on history. Are the Incas sort of the Romans of the Americas?
Oh, they're actually different than, say, the Maya or many of the other cultures. And I actually like those cultures, partially because my wife taught them in class, and so I've kept up with them. I'm working on Maya-themed games at the moment. I don't know that they're really the Roman Empire, but they spread and they grew very quickly. So they're kind of a fascinating sort of template in that sense, or theme in that sense.
Cool. So do you find that there are recurring themes in your games?
Oh, absolutely. Both recurring themes and recurring mechanics.
Okay.
I have a large number of games that are Old West themed.
Oh, neat.
Because that's kind of fun. It's something that I can appreciate. Uh-huh. You know, my family lives in Tucson, so there is that access to it. And so that theme pops up a lot in the kind of games that I do. The Mesoamerican cultures also, and Southern American cultures, the Americas, are kind of interesting as well.
Do you have to have much knowledge to play like an Old West game or an Incan Empire game? Or throughout the process of playing, do you learn what you need to know?
I think you don't really need to know the theme as a background.
So it's not like Trivial Pursuit, no, where it's testing your knowledge.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, you're reacting to, you're doing things. And the theme helps in the sense of, like, this Inca game, you're going through history. So so each of the eras, if you will, relates to an emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's information you could learn if you're interested. There's trivia in the rule book about, you know, how I put the game together based on, you know, real things. And that's how that works. You don't really need to know about it. And it's sort of a lure if you're interested in it or fascinated by it.
Well, and what's the level of complexity of these games, say, ranging from Candyland and Chutes and Ladders up to, I don't know, Risk?
Most of them are, well, it varies. I mean, that really is the easiest way to say it. Tuantinsuyu, Inca Empire, is a fairly complicated game. It's not what I would call an introductory game.
Right.
You need to have a sense of how to play it, although you could learn it not knowing anything about games and catch on fairly quickly, but you would probably be behind most of the game to people who knew how to play these types of games.
Right.
Most of the games I design are, the idea is that a non-gamer could play them, because I have friends who don't game or learning to game, and I want them to participate. You know, I want the social interaction. I love sitting at the table with people.
Cool.
You know, and talking, and you need to have the time to be able to have a conversation that isn't just, oh my God, what's my next move?
And how long do your games typically last? Are they like, oh, this would be fun to do after dinner, or we need to set aside a weekend for this thing?
The games that I design, my saying is always, a game is the right length if it feels like it's the right length. So a game like Inca Empire is going to take about 2 hours to play.
Okay.
Card games, less. You know, some of the other games that I've designed are shorter. I have a couple that are longer. The longer the game, the harder it is to get it published. So that's always an entertaining problem.
Well, and that leads to my next question, which was, so say you got an idea for a game and you go, gee, that should be a game. How does one become a game designer?
Wow. Kind of like you become an actor. I don't know. You sort of hope there's work out there for you.
There's no one way to do it.
There's no one way to do it, indeed. I've been doing this for a long time, so I've actually gotten in, and I know it's a very small industry, like most of them are. And there are, you know, game designers have different ways into game companies, whether it's because they know somebody or you just go to conventions and you pitch your game to everybody over and over and over again and hope someone bites.
And there are game conventions now, I'm learning.
All over the country, all over the world, actually. One of the largest ones is in Essen, Germany in October.
Okay.
And that's a great place to go to pitch things to a market. The European market was much larger than the American market for years because it's more that social thing is, you know, instead of don't send your kid to sit in front of a computer when we can all sit at the table together and do something that was much more of a cultural choice.
Cool.
So board gaming is more popular there. You see these strategic games in Toys R Us and places like that.
Got it.
There, whereas here, you know, you only see the little kids' games on the shelves. And
yeah, true.
So how did you get in?
Well, you
knew people. Is that what it's like in every business? You know somebody.
I did know somebody. Yeah. As it turned out, I accidentally ended up gaming with someone who was publishing games, and he sort of lured me in, you know, lured me over to the dark side so that I could be a part of this as we talked about ideas for rules and those kinds of things. And so that was sort of the first step. And then meeting all of these different people, you start to find out who's printing games. And I actually self-published the first 9 games that I did. So
cool.
Actually, because I didn't find a company to pick up my game, to license it to, I self-published them, and we sold them out of the garage, so to speak. I still have plenty. You know, some of them have sold out. The Tuan Tsuyu I've sold out and has since been reprinted. And now that I have a following and sort of a critical. I don't know how I would say that, but
you're a critically esteemed within the industry.
Yes. In the industry, you know, I have the ability now to go to these people and now I'm getting paid by other people for them to print my games. So that's always a nice thing.
Sweet. Yeah. So that's why you're able to retire from teaching and
live a life.
Oh, sure. There's a fortune there, I'm sure, somewhere.
So it is similar to gaming, to acting.
Yes, yeah. Very much so. I'm sure there are people who have hit it big, and it's not me. But I do enjoy the process, and I enjoy what I do. And it's really nice. It is really nice to see your game in print.
I'm sure.
Well, yeah, it's like being an author. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, there's my script. Is it making me any money? No, but. There it is. It's a thing. It exists. It's like acting. You can make a killing but not a living.
This is Matt Walker, the artistic director of the Troubadour Theater Company in Los Angeles, and you're listening to the Reduce Shakespeare Podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? The next time you can see us is in Qatar in the Middle East, where we'll do 2 performances of the complete works of William Shakespeare abridged in the Qatara Theater in the capital city of Doha on March 11th, 2016. We'll perform student matinees and conduct student workshops that aren't open to the public earlier in the week. Then we'll return to the U.S. for performances of the complete history of comedy abridged in Allentown, Pennsylvania, North Andover, Massachusetts, Schaumburg, Illinois, Saratoga, Rancho Cucamonga, and Poway, California, Gillette, Wyoming, Reston, Virginia, and Somerville, New Jersey. And of course, from April 21st to May 8th, we'll perform William Shakespeare's long-lost first play abridged at the Folger Theater in Washington, D.C. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to reducedshakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information. And even though you can't RSC the RSC this month, if you're in Los Angeles, you can see the Falcon Theater production of The Complete History of America Abridged, directed by our own Jerry Kernahan. It's getting amazing reviews and runs for the next 2 weeks until March 6, 2016. It also features Thomas Hobson singing my politically correct national anthem as an amazingly realistic Ray Charles.
Oh, beautiful, spacious skies. And unexploited waves of botanical companions for mounted majesties of color and free-roaming non-human beings beside the differently harvested plain. Now, come on now, I'm talking about non-Eurocentric bioregion, non-theologically specific supreme being, if she exists, shed ambigenic grace on thee, made you more of a non-speciesistic multicultural eco-warrior from chronologically gifted anthropomorphized river to cosmetically enhanced sea, Georgia.
And now back to my conversation with game designer Alan Ernstein.
So we've heard about the Tuantan Suyu, the Inca Empire game. What are some of the other games you have out there?
Well, actually, a fun one that is coming out any day now, we'll find out when it gets here, is a game called Alan's Adventureland. I didn't choose the title, ironically. There's a very funny story behind that. But it's about building an amusement park.
Uh-huh.
And that actually evolved from some of the mechanics of other games that I had printed. Uh-huh. And one of them is a three-dimensional scoring grid, which is, you can imagine, an amusement park is great. Do I build lots of different rides, or do I make one ride taller? And so that's the idea, is that you have a card play mechanism that allows you to make those choices, and you're building your amusement park, and you're trying to build a cooler amusement park than your opponents.
Nice. That seems like that would be very popular with a younger audience.
Well, I hope so. We'll find out.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And is that three words or two, Alan's Adventureland?
It's just two. That's Alan's and then Adventureland's, all one word. One of the joys of the title was we were looking for amusement parks that didn't already have names.
Right.
So, you know, because we didn't want to deal with licensing or copyright infringement or any of that. So we were searching for a name. There is an Adventureland in Australia.
Okay.
There's not an Alan's Adventureland, as far as I know, so I think we're pretty safe.
But there might be.
Maybe now.
Who has the theme park rights when you sell a game?
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, you retain those, I guess.
Yeah.
That's great. Are you working in the kind of gaming that you... Are you designing the kinds of games that you want to design, or is there still a kind of a game out there you're going, God, I would really like to do that, and I haven't figured out how to do that yet? You know what I'm asking? Is there a holy grail for you?
No.
Okay.
Some of that is that ideally the kind of game that I want to find, the holy grail game, would be something that we haven't thought of yet. Which, you know, of course, everyone says that that's the case. There's always something we haven't thought of, and everyone goes, "Oh, that's been done before."
Right.
You know, I like to design games that I want to play. So that's one step of the process.
Okay.
Is that if I'm not interested in playing them, you know, that's not going to be a part of it. So I'm not a big fan of what they call cooperative games, where everyone's fighting toward a single goal. Pandemic is the big version of that out right now.
Okay.
And so I don't know that I'll ever get around to designing a game like that.
Right.
But that doesn't mean I won't come up with something similar or something along, you know, taking some idea from that process. I'm always looking for something different. I'm looking, and I like to use things that people are familiar with.
Okay.
You know, so for example, the Ink Empire game is based on a crayon game, a building a railroad game.
Okay.
It has that mechanic that people would recognize, but now we've turned it into something different, which is my spin on things.
As we're talking, my mind is racing about, oh, God, have they done a game like that? So I'm a big sci-fi space nerd, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, is there a Star Trek game? Well, yeah, there is, but it's just Star Trek Monopoly.
No, there are actually really complex Star Trek games.
Oh, okay.
There's a whole variety of them, including, you know, miniatures games, and there's actually a Starfleet Battles, which is exploring space, and you have officers and you have characters from the shows.
Right.
I mean, there's a big... The big game right out that's still out that I actually enjoy is Firefly. There's a whole game that actually does a really beautiful job of capturing the theme of the television series.
The Joss Whedon's show. Yeah.
And so that, there's all of that
cool
stuff out there. If you can imagine it, then someone is either trying it or needs to try it.
Right. Yeah. If I've thought of it, it's really been done. So I know that my dozens of listeners are going to want to run out and buy your games. Where can they find your games?
Well, the games that are published by other companies are marketed all over the place now.
Okay.
So you can get them through game stores, board, you know, not Toys R Us, but
right, okay,
but a bunch of game stores. My self-published games, most of those, the easiest way to get them is to get to me at www.hangmangames, all one word, .com, and I've still got copies left at a great discount because I'm trying to clear the garage out before I move again.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your favorite board game via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook or Twitter. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, race car Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Hannah Proctor. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Thomas Hobson for his version of our PC national anthem from The Complete History of America Abridged, now running at the Falcon Theater in Burbank until March 6th. Thanks also to Matt Walker, artistic director of the Troubadour Theater Company, who also spends a lot of time performing at the Falcon. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Tischner, 1440th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Alan Bernstein.
Nice start.
Great start. I've had a terrific beginning to this. Do I even know an Alan Bernstein? I don't think I do.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less.